The Philippines health chief not consulted over government's decision to remove the facility-based quarantine for fully vaccinated travelers. A group of doctors warn the further easing of health restrictions in Metro Manila beginning this weekend could spell disaster. San Juan City Mayor Francis Zamora will join us for a discussion on this hot topic. Health Secretary Francisco Duque III disagrees with the president's order barring cabinet officials from attending the Senate's probe into pandemic supply deals. And presidential candidate Manila Mayor Isko Moreno denies there is a squabble in his camp. We'll tackle that with political analyst Professor Edmund Taya. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Topping the news at this hour, Philippine Health Secretary Francisco Duque III questions government's decision to remove the facility-based quarantine for fully vaccinated travelers. See, on Wednesday, Malacanang announced those fully vaccinated from so-called green countries are no longer required to undergo such a procedure. But Duque says he wasn't consulted about the matter.
As far as I'm concerned, I've always supported a facility quarantine. At least, you know, 5 days test, and then once the result comes out, you continue home quarantine.
At home.
If I recall, even the president had said that he wanted to just reduce the quarantine period, but not to get rid, do away with the quarantine period. I was told that in some countries they're doing this now, but those countries can afford to do it because their national vaccination coverage is more than 70%, whereas we are only at 30%. And not all travelers are going passing through NCR. Some travelers are going to Davao, to Cebu, to other airports. So that's a cause for concern.
Duque also says other officials like Vaccine Chief Carlito Galvez Jr. and Interior Secretary Eduardo Año were also not part of the deliberations. Duque says he will raise his concerns over the new policy during the meeting of the Interagency Task Force on COVID-19 today. Well, the issue over easing health restrictions for travelers comes as the National Capital Region shifts to a looser quarantine alert level this weekend. Metro Manila will be under alert level 3 from October 16 to 31. The NCR has been under alert level 4 since mid-September. Under alert level 3, more businesses will be allowed to reopen at increased capacities. But a group of doctors warns this may lead to another surge in COVID-19 cases.
We can actually expect na medyo aakyat uli ang number of cases. We need to take calculated risk. Pero the important word or the important term is calculated. They don't even know kung ano yung dapat na maging basehan, no? How much decrease in the cases, how much ano yung utilization rate ng mga ospital ang gusto nilang tignan. Pag umabot ba sa ganito o pwede na, no? Tapos pag nakita nilang oops, umaakyat, ito naman ang aming gagawin. Is there such a thing?
Government also approved a modified enhanced community quarantine status for 11 areas outside of Metro Manila, including Bulacan, Cavite, and Zamboanga City. Areas to be placed under a general community quarantine with heightened restrictions include Baguio and Bacolod. Dozens of other areas, such as the province of Cebu and Davao City, will be under GCQ. The rest of the country will be under modified GCQ. Cinemas in Metro Manila can finally reopen this Saturday as it shifts to alert level 3. But Interior Secretary Jonathan Malaya says, make that undersecretary, the places can only cater to fully vaccinated individuals and at a limited capacity.
a lot of people are so happy with this. No? Even the Cinema Operators Association, they're happy because under the old guidelines, they would still continue to be prohibited under Alert Level 3. But they really appealed and requested that they be allowed to open. So yes, 30% indoor capacity for cinemas under Alert Level 3. Since it's only 30%, there will be seats in between moviegoers that will be left vacant.
Aside from the downtrend in daily COVID cases, Malaya also credits the ramped-up vaccination drive for the easing of the restrictions in Metro Manila. China to donate more COVID-19 vaccines to the Philippines. This was announced by Chinese Ambassador Huang Xilian in a post on social media. He says Beijing will send a million more Sinovac vaccines to Manila next week. That's in a bid to help boost the country's inoculation drive. Chinese-made COVID-19 vaccines make up almost half of the Philippines' supply. And going back to one of our top stories, now are cities in Metro Manila ready for the influx of people going outside their homes as health restrictions ease beginning this weekend? Joining us now is the mayor of San Juan City, Francis Zamora. Mayor, good afternoon. Welcome to the program and thanks for joining us today.
Yes, good afternoon, Carmina, and thanks for having me again on ANC. All right.
It spells disaster. It's a calculated risk. It may lead to another spike in cases. That's the concern of a group of doctors. Do you share the same belief or are you ready for the reopening of the economy slowly by bringing down the alert level a notch lower?
Carmina, I am in favor of shifting to alert level 3. In fact, I have been very vocal about this the past few days because specifically here in San Juan, our cases are down to just 347 from 1,123 last September 16. So that is a 69% drop in just 27 days. And we are seeing that the trend is continuing to go down. And our vaccination rate is up to 220% already for the first dose and 185% for fully vaccinated individuals. So combine these two factors and our adherence to minimum health standards, I believe that the Alert Level 3 implementation will be something that we can handle at this point.
But Mayor, that's just talking about the bubble of San Juan City. What about intercity travel and the prospect of, you know, people outside the city going into San Juan and the possibility of seeing these the low number rise up again?
Carmina, the entire Metro Manila's numbers are going down. We have seen this. And in fact, we as a Metro Manila Council meet twice or thrice a week with the DOH, with the IATF. And the numbers show that there is a very sharp decline. And just to point out, last Christmas season, we were very much open to people from other provinces, other cities. But we did not experience any surge. In fact, during that time, we were just at around 60 active cases. And this proves that we can indeed reopen the economy for as long as all minimum health standards and protocols are followed. Mm-hmm. The only difference really is the Delta surge that we experienced a few months ago, which we have seen now has been slowly arrested. So if this trend continues, I believe that we will all be at manageable levels for alert level 3.
You say you have only 347 active cases. How many areas do you have under granular lockdown, Mayor?
Carmina, from a high of 25, we are down to just 6 granular lockdown areas. So again, numbers don't lie and we base our decisions on data that we have on hand. And this is really a big drop already from what we experienced just a month ago.
Mm. And when you trace back the spike, because we know that the vaccination in San Juan is actually a model for some of the cities, right? The vaccination rate in the city is quite high. But when you trace back the spike that happened, what's the origin of that spike? Where did the Delta surge come from? Was it from outside the city that breached the city of San Juan, Mayor?
The first cases of Delta variant in the country were from the provinces, if you remember. And then these cases slowly found their way to Metro Manila. And since we are highly populated, that's where the surge began. But again, with the ramped up vaccination and also our implementation of protocols, we are seeing the numbers go down. In fact, we have seen the effectiveness of the alert level system. Remember, the granular lockdown areas focus on high risk locations where there are a lot of cases, and it does not disrupt the normalcy of life in the other areas that don't have cases. And this has proven to be effective for all of us because we are seeing results. And if you ask me, gumagana ba yung alert levels? Yes. That is why itong alert level 3, ano bang nakita natin, termina? No? It's basically just an additional operational capacity. Mm-hmm. So from a low of 10% from the start for indoor services such as indoor dining or personal care, it has increased to 20 a few weeks ago and now to 30. Mm-hmm. If you have a safety seal in your establishment, an additional 10% will be given to you. If you are in a location wherein your vaccination rate for senior citizens and persons with comorbidities is already beyond 70%, it's another 20% operational capacity. So the vaccination programs of cities actually incentivize the opening of the economy. Kung kayo ay bakunado na, mas malaki ang percentage ng pwedeng magbukas in terms of the operational capacity.
Well, talking about the reopening of some businesses, cinemas and theaters will be allowed to reopen with at limited capacity. There's been a lot of talk about the infrastructure being there to welcome the people back in. Kayo ba naikot nyo na yung mga cinema sa San Juan at nakita nyo na meron ba silang retrofitting ng ventilation? What can you tell us about that?
Well, under Alert Level 3, what will be allowed will be 30% for those who are fully vaccinated. I will be visiting the theaters today. In fact, I've coordinated with the mall management of both the Greenwood Shopping Center and Santolan Town Plaza. In fact, I jokingly ask, ano bang mapapanood natin na mga movies? Hmm. So they named two movies that are very popular abroad that are coming in this November. And also they mentioned the possibility of having private screenings in their theaters. So with regard to the infrastructure, I believe it's still the same as to from where they left out when they started to close in 2020. Mm-hmm. However, we will require them really to have very good ventilation in terms of the air filters, circulation of the air inside the theater. So this is something that I've already told them from the start because they have been waiting for the reopening for many, many months. So these are things that they have already prepared for. Remember, Carmina, here in the Greenwood Shopping Center, we have been using the cinemas as our vaccination site. Yeah. For the last 4 or 5 months. And I have not encountered any problems in terms of infection within the theaters. So I have seen how theaters work as vaccination sites. The air circulation has been vastly improved. Also, they are seated very wide apart. Mm. And protocols are all followed. Remember, only those who are fully vaccinated will be allowed inside the theaters, and you have to wear your masks. So all health protocols are in place.
There is that concern, though, that it may lead, the further easing of restrictions may lead to another spike. A question now is the new alert level system, Mayor, flexible enough for local chief executives like you to dial down the easing of restrictions once you see that there is a spike?
Yes, we as Metro Manila Council meet every week, in fact, sometimes twice or thrice a week. And we always observe and study the effects of whatever quarantine changes we are experiencing. Mm-hmm. And we immediately voice out concerns if there are any. So I believe that if the fear of some people actually arise that there will be a surge because of this, we can always adjust immediately. But with what I have seen in Alert Level 4, the actual expected outcomes are being experienced now. And again, I will go back to Christmas season 2020, wherein almost everyone was out. Everyone was in the mall. Everyone was shopping, dining outside, but we remained at a very low number of active cases. So it is very much possible to experience the same thing this Christmas season.
There's another factor there with alert level 3. According to presidential spokesperson Harry Roque, there will be no more age-based mobility restrictions except if it is approved by some local governments. In the city of San Juan, what is the situation? Will there still be age-based mobility restrictions?
Right now, with the guidelines I'm seeing, it's still 18 to 65. I have not seen any guidelines that state that those below 18 can go out, except for exercise and if it is an emergency case or medical related. So I am in favor of keeping it that way for now. Remember, it all has to be done gradually. We should not rush into easing hastily because we have to continue to observe the effect of whatever quarantine changes we do in the next couple of weeks and months.
The next phase, and people are talking about this, the vaccination of children. I understand in the city of San Juan, there have been a lot of parents registering their children.
Correct. Around 5,000 children aged 12 to 17 have registered in almost just 1 month. And we are awaiting the go signal from the IATF as to when we can start in San Juan. Initially, there are six hospitals in Metro Manila that will begin with the vaccination of this age group. And here in San Juan, we are just waiting for our go signal. But we are prepared. This is no different from the vaccination that we've been doing since March, except that we're handling a different age group. So San Juan has proven to be very effective in terms of its vaccination program. So we will not change anything.
Do you have enough vaccines? So tell us about the current vaccination program. I know that you're vaccinating people from outside the city now.
Yes, we still have a lot of vaccines. In fact, the arrangement with the IATF was they will continue to supply us for as long as we vaccinate those from other cities. And this is an agreement that I and the IATF had come to when we reached herd immunity, because they wanted us to help vaccinate Filipinos from other cities. And of course, that's something that we have been excited to do. In fact, we have been doing it the past few months. Now, what I have told my city health officer is to reserve the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines for our local population aged 12 to 17, because these are the only two vaccines that can be inoculated to them. So we are now using our other brands for those who are not from the city of San Juan.
All right. Now, you know the discussion out there, right? Boosters versus, you know, reserving the vaccine that you have for the eventual vaccination of children aged 12 to 17. What is your opinion on that? Should the boosters be given now? And if so, to whom? Go ahead.
This will be really based on the vaccine supply. If we have enough supply for both the minors and also those who will need the boosters, then why not? But in case we feel that there will be a shortage, we have to follow the prioritization first. And I believe children would be prioritized first, because if you do not, then you would have adults having third and fourth shots while children will not have a single shot yet. So it is a function of vaccine supply. And with the news I am hearing, millions and millions of doses are arriving in the Philippines. So this is very good for us. If I had my way, I'd vaccinate all children and eventually all adults again with the third and fourth shots, because March was when we started. It's already October, so it's already been 6 months. So as each month passes, that means the efficacy of the vaccines in our body also declines. So we will eventually really need to get vaccinated again at some point.
I want to shift now to local politics, Mayor, if you don't mind. You're running. You filed again for re-election in the city of San Juan as mayor, but you're not running unopposed, are you?
There was a candidate that filed a few days before the deadline, so I will have an opponent. As far as I know, he is a former Barangay Cagawad, from Barangay Batis. He ran once as barangay captain but did not make it. So that's the information I have about him.
Mm. Many really credited you for bringing down the Estrada dynasty in the city of San Juan when you won. But your sister is now taking the place of your father as representative of San Juan, correct?
That's correct, Carmina.
So how is that not setting up your own dynasty, the Zamora dynasty, in the place of the Estrada dynasty?
Carmina, the people of San Juan have seen the benefits of a mayor and a congressman working well together. And that is what San Juan has experienced in the last 2 years. I have been working well with my father, Congressman Noni Zamora, and San Juan has experienced so much projects and programs that it never really experienced before. To name a few, we have two high-rise in-city public housing buildings, 122 stories and 123 stories that are both under construction, so much infrastructure projects, so much funding from the national government that benefits the people of San Juan. So our constituents are really looking for the continuity of these programs because the threat of an Estrada or Ejército to come back is always there. Mm-hmm. And people see that the only way to block a comeback of the Ejércitos and the Estradas is for the Zamoras to be consolidated in the congressional and the mayoralty position. So at the end of the day, Carmina, it's the people that will decide if they feel that their current mayor has been working well for the city. They will trust that eventually, if my sister will win as congressman, they will trust that we will continue to work well for the general welfare of San Juan.
You know, you come from a political family, and I'm sure you've heard a lot of criticisms being hurled in the past against some candidates. Meron diyang kamag-anak, merong kaibigan, pero sa siyudad po ng San Juan, people are saying merong ka-basketball. What are you saying about that criticism that, you know, in your slate, there are known basketball players there? First, your answer to the criticism, and what could they possibly bring in terms of value to the city of San Juan? Go ahead, Mayor.
Carmina, I was once a basketball player. I played for the De La Salle University Green Archers. We won the UAP championships. What did I develop back then as an athlete? The mental and physical discipline. You learn about determination, hard work, perseverance. These are things that build character. And all of these traits I have carried up to this day, as I am the mayor of San Juan. So have I been a good mayor, even if I'm a basketball player? I believe so. With all modesty aside, I believe I've been doing my tasks as mayor very well, and the people of San Juan are experiencing good leadership. So there's nothing wrong with being a basketball player. Now, we should not judge them as basketball players alone, but also as to what they can do. Number one, Paul Artadi, a former PBA player, is now entering his third term if he wins. He has functioned well as a city councilor during his first two terms. Don Aliado, who is working with me here in my office for the last 2 years, has gained a lot of experience also being under my wing, helping me in all our projects and programs. And James Yap will be the newcomer. But remember, they are running for positions of councilor. They're not running for vice mayor, mayor, congressman. Meaning, the position of councilor is an entry-level position in the local government. I also started as a city councilor in 2007, but eventually became a two-term vice mayor and the mayor. So this is a good starting point for them. I don't see anything wrong with being an athlete. Let us not look down on athletes. We have seen how our athletes during the Olympics have brought honor to our country. So let's not look at them just as athletes per se, but also what they can do. I believe that I will be able to guide them as mayor for them to be able to do the tasks as expected of them by the people of San Juan.
San Juan City Mayor Francis Zamora there joining us this afternoon. Appreciate you coming to the show once again. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you, Carmina.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, Philippine Health Secretary Francisco Duque III against the president's order barring cabinet members from Senate investigations. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on AMC. We're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Philippines' health chief not consulted over government's decision to remove the facility-based quarantine for fully vaccinated travelers. A group of doctors warn the further easing of health restrictions in Metro Manila beginning this weekend could spell disaster. Health Secretary Francisco Duque III disagrees with the president's order barring cabinet officials from attending the Senate's probe into pandemic supply deals. And presidential candidate Manila Mayor Isko Moreno denies there is a squabble in his camp. Back with more news, Health Secretary Francisco Duque III acknowledging the importance of the Senate's probe into government's pandemic spending. During Wednesday's Senate hearing on the Health Department's budget, Duque said President Duterte should not have barred cabinet officials from participating in the Blue Ribbon Committee's investigation. He says he's even willing to take the matter up with Malacañang. The president has called the proceedings a waste of time. The Senate probe has linked former Duterte advisor Michael Yang to the allegedly anomalous multi-billion peso pandemic supply deals with formerly pharmaceuticals.
We are one with them, and as I have manifested to the Senate, that we're ready to support. You know, any questions that they will ask, we could probably send them the documents or give us a written question. We'll write them back. We have submitted subpoena, duces tecum. So we are very much in support of measures that will ferret out the truth.
State insurer PhilHealth blames the pandemic for its slow processing of medical claims. President and CEO Dante Guiran says PhilHealth is processing an average of 39,000 claims daily. That's more than last year's daily average of 31,000 claims. He adds the state health insurer is also suffering manpower shortages.
We blame it again on the pandemic because we have a limited locomotive. Some of our people got sick. As a matter of fact, some of our people even died. No? And we cannot tell everybody that we have this problem. So we are doing something about this.
In August, PhilHealth said it has nearly 13 billion pesos in unpaid claims in different stages of processing. The Private Hospitals Association of the Philippines had warned many of its members may not renew their PhilHealth accreditation next year if issues with the payment of claims are not resolved. Presidential contender Manila Mayor Francisco Isko Moreno Dumagoso denies there is infighting in his camp. See, Moreno lost two key allies Wednesday. Veteran broadcaster Noli De Castro, who was slated to run under Moreno's Acción Democrático, backed out of the senatorial race. De Castro said he can better serve the public as a journalist. Moreno also lost his chief of staff, Cesar Chavez, who has decided to go back to the broadcasting business as well. The Manila mayor says he understands the departures, but he denies there is a squabble among his allies.
Nagkaroon siya ng health reason, that's one. Two, he has to attend to his family. So ayoko nag-i-interfere pagka pamilya na. Siyempre, kaya ka nga naghahanap buhay para sa pamilya mo.
Mayor Moreno also moving on from his verbal spat with presidential rival Vice President Lenny Robredo. That's after the Manila mayor called Robredo out for insinuating they have different views on the dictatorship of the late Ferdinand Marcos, whose son, Bongbong, is also gunning for the country's top post.
Every person who were asked and being accused must answer. Oh, na-offend yung sino man. I'm sorry. I, hindi ako anghel, hindi ako perfecto. Yung batas, no? Kung ano yung nasa batas. Okay. Hindi para pagigantihan, kundi para papanagutin ang may mga sala. No? Okay. Whether it is an ill-gotten wealth, we go after that. Whether crime committed, we go after that.
Aside from the Marcos issue, Moreno is also being tagged as a secret candidate of President Duterte. Moreno's camp laughed off this allegation.
It's an early black propaganda against Mayor Sco Moreno. And it's really laughable. Acción Democratico will not tolerate such things. We've been we've been critical of this administration. We were part of the 2019 coalition, right? If you remember it, with the Liberal Party. We were very much opposed. We did not go for Duterte in 2016. So, malinaw yung Action Democratico will not be part of this so-called scheme that we are fronting for this administration.
Well, let's now get the perspective of a top political analyst on these latest developments in the 2022 race. Professor Edmund Tayao of the Ateneo School of Government now joins us. Professor Tayao is also the executive director of the Local Government Development Foundation. Professor, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Carmina.
All right, so let's go ahead with the discussion. It's not infighting. There is no squabble. But you have two key allies of the mayor leaving HQ in the past couple of days. What's happening in the headquarters of the Manila mayor? How troublesome is this for him? How worrisome is it for the candidate, Professor?
You know, Carmina, we can expect this not only within the team of Mayor Isko, but even with the other candidates. It's just normal and expected to have differences within the party or within the group. Now, as far as the decision of individual candidates to reconsider, you know, their earlier bid, well, of course, again, it may have something to do with the limitations of the group of Mayor Isko. But it could also be the individual decision of the candidate. Alam mo kasi, Carmina, as you know, the kind of politics that we have is, you know, everything is dependent on the personality, no? Mm-hmm. Dependent on the candidate himself and dependent on the key candidate that one is allied with. So kung tatakbo kang senador and you're allied with the presidential contender, the presidential contender should be able to at the very least, no, contribute significantly to the cost of your campaign. Kasi we don't have real political parties, Carmina. So there are real considerations to be made as far as individual candidates are concerned. So we can only surmise that perhaps apart from individual differences within the team of Mayor Isko, there may probably also some considerations when it comes to funding.
But that this is happening as well this early. And also, I have to point out, Professor Tayao, that, of course, we were just talking about two personalities here, Cesar Chavez's former chief of staff and also former Vice President Noli de Castro. But some people have also been adding the name of Congresswoman Vilma Santos into the mix. The fact that her candidacy under his slate did not push through. Many are pointing to that as sort of portentous of what had happened in the past couple of days, Professor.
You know, if the other candidates or the other candidates have a full slate on at the very start, then I wouldn't really consider this as common to all the candidates. But the fact that it's not only Mayor Isko, but even all the presidential candidates, if I'm not mistaken, don't have a complete slate. Some are even running without a vice president. So in other words, it's, overreaching to consider that there's really a big problem, you know, within the camp of Mayor Isko. Perhaps, again, as I've been saying, alam mo, any big organization, and I have to say, the political group of Mayor Isko seem to be the biggest political group now, all of those that seem to have not found their places earlier on, no, have now found themselves with the group of Mayor's Co. So, halo sila doon, no? There are so many old names identified with Mayor's Co, and there are also new names with Mayor's Co. And so it's really bound to require, no, substantial organizing skills to keep them, you know, towing the same line. So let's see. I don't know if this will also play out with the other candidates, no? But I suppose hindi masyadong natitinig yung sa ibang kandidato. But the fact remains that all the candidates don't have a complete slate.
Mm-hmm. That this happened this early, is this sort of, as you know, a part of what is expected in the early days of this season? Or do you think that this is sort of a glimpse already into how his organization, his quarters will be in the run-up to the elections? What do you think about that?
Again, Carmina, no, I don't want to be overreaching, because as I've said, if the other candidates have a complete slate already and this is happening only to Mayor Isko, or at the very least happening only to two candidates, then we can very well say that there's something wrong with the organization. The point is, it's already a given that given the kind of politics that we have, which is literally lacking an institutional kind of system, everything depends on the personality. So it's bound to happen. So we can say, of course, it somehow gives us a peek of the kind of leadership that Mayor Isko will provide or can provide with us. But having said that, it can also be considered that at this early, they can already make some adjustments. You know, the bigger the organization...
Professor? Professor? We seem to have lost Professor Edmund Tayo there. We're going to try and get him back. Don't you guys worry. We're going to try and get him back on the line, because we also want to talk about the other presidential contenders here. As the professor said a while ago, it's not only Manila Mayor Isko Moreno, who has yet to really consolidate a full slate. It's the same problem across the board, including with the ruling PDP Laban Cusi faction, and also with the other wing, Senator Manny Pacquiao's faction, including also Vice President Lenny Robredo's slate that has yet to be really formalized and solidified. We're still trying to get Professor Edmund Tayo back on the line, but until we do that, we're going to move on with the rest of the news. The World Health Organization forms a new advisory group, which may be the medical community's last chance to determine the origins of the novel coronavirus. Let's get the details in this report.
Right now, this is our best chance, and it may be our last chance to understand the origins of this virus.
The World Health Organization announced the creation of a newly formed group Wednesday that it called its last chance to determine the origins of COVID-19 and urged China to cooperate. The question of where and how the coronavirus came to be has become a highly volatile issue and a particularly touchy topic for China, where the first cases emerged in late 2019. Mike Ryan, WHO's head of emergencies program, urged calm amid a renewed bid for answers.
That is a human endeavor to understand a virus that has stopped our whole world. And I would ask everyone, countries, journalists, and everybody else, to create a little space for that discussion to happen.
A WHO-led team spent 4 weeks in and around Wuhan, China, earlier this year with Chinese scientists probing the earliest known cases of the coronavirus, and said in a joint report in March that the virus had probably been transmitted from bats to humans through another animal, but further research was needed. WHO Director Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said that the investigation was hampered by a lack of raw data and has called for lab audits. China has repeatedly dismissed theories that the virus leaked from one of its laboratories and has said no more visits are needed. But the WHO believes otherwise.
And I very much hope that there will be further missions to China and other countries.
In an editorial in the journal Science, the WHO said that detailed investigations of the earliest known and suspected cases in China prior to December of 2019 were still needed, including analyses of stored blood samples from 2019 in Wuhan. Chen Xu, China's ambassador to the UN, noted that international teams had been sent to China twice already and that, quote, it is time to send teams to other places.
And we have back with us Professor Edmund Tayo of the Ateneo School of Government. Professor, sorry about that. Nice to have you back on the show.
Hello. You hear me?
Yeah, I can. All right. So let's continue on with the discussion.
Also in this country, you know, the telecommunications infrastructure really is one thing. I hope the next administration really will resolve this once and for all.
All right. You don't have to tell me about that. Every day, it's sort of, you don't know what's going to happen every day. Anyway, let's go back to the discussion. When you talk about what's happening in the camp of Mayor Isko Moreno, and then you talk about, you know, that this is a problem not exclusive to him. But when you look at the other camps, Professor, they're talking about consolidating. Here you have people leaving HQ. So it's not the same.
Yeah, you could say that, Carmina, but it also shows the comparative size of the different groups. Again, as I've said, you can very well identify so many groups found within the group of Mayor Isko, because perhaps there's a reason why presenting themselves as not necessarily an anti-Duterte group, nor is it a pro previous administration group. So, in other words, unifying candidate. That's how they would like themselves called. No, the other candidates, of course, would like to consolidate precisely because they want to increase their numbers. They want to increase their reach. So, yeah, you're right. No, it's an entirely different context, so to speak. But one thing is common with all the other candidates. Something's really wrong with the kind of politics that we have. And until such time that we can veer away and change this personality-oriented politics, we will always be experiencing this kind of developments.
So let's talk about the other contenders now. We talked about the consolidation. And when you talk about consolidation, people are talking about now Vice President Leni Robredo and her continuing bid to consolidate a true united opposition. Do you think it's still possible at this point?
When you say united opposition, Carmina, and our idea of opposition is any candidate that's not identified with the administration or does not identify with the administration, with that definition, I don't think there can be something that could be done to still unify them, because it's like saying you're going to consolidate the group of Senator Ping and Senator Soto, Mayor Isko, no, and Senator Manny Pacquiao. They've gone through a series of talks, and everyone has heard of those reports, and nothing came out of it. So one is, in fact, up to now, blaming the other for the failure of, having a common candidate. Again, this has something to do with the system, because, again, it's not the political parties that actually decide who gets to run. It's the personality himself who decides or who gets to make the final say as to whether he or she is going to run.
Hmm. Let's talk about Vice President Leni and the left. What are your thoughts about that? People now talking about why the vice president has yet to include Nery Colmenares, for example, in her slate. How important, or is it important, for the left to be allied with the Vice President Leni Robredo at this point?
It would really be a plus, no, for the vice president to have them on her side.
In the same vein,
in the same vein that the left would have the advantage of having Vice President Robledo on their side, because each would gain allies, no, in the process. Again, we have to consider significantly that we have this several months more, no, paying out to the May elections, and there's really a need to, as you've said, consolidate and really organize, no, the different political groups vying for office. So this will definitely be to their advantage. It will add numbers to them, and it will beef up their machinery with whatever it is that they already have.
Why is this an argument solely for the vice president and the left? Why can't we talk about the left and Senator Pacquiao, for example, the left and Senator Ping Lacson, together with Senate President Vicente Soto III, and even with Manila Mayor Isko Moreno, who is widely believed to be supported by the left?
You know, Carmina, so much have already happened in the past, not only 6 years, no, but in the past several administrations. And we've seen the many instances that the government has tried to negotiate with the left, starting, not only starting with then democracy icon, the late President Cory Aquino. And we know already what happened, no? In regard to with this, our negotiations with the Moro rebels, we are already in the far advanced stage. In the case of the left rebels, the leftist rebels, we have not even gone to square one. No? So, in other words, if you're a candidate and you're going to weigh your options, you would not want to be really identified with the left. Perhaps that's one reason why. And this is the very reason also why, if you are going to understand the way the vice president has been extending cooperative gestures to the left, is to really defining that this is the democratic left groups, no, and not the leftist organizations that have critical relationships, no, with the armed groups. So if there's any reason for it, well, perhaps it's only Vice President Lenny who considers, no, the value of working with the left-oriented organizations.
Nothing prevents the left, these organizations, to declare their support, right, for Vice President Lenny Robredo.
Yeah, but again, I don't think it's the left that started the negotiations. So the way I understand the news, if my sources are right, or if the news that I've happened to read is accurate, it's the vice president that extended, you know, the discussion with the leftist organizations. Of course, the left would definitely have their right. In fact, it is their tactical or strategic advantage, not to be the one deciding who to be allied with. But they themselves are also being careful in this regard. Again, this election really is proving to be very unique, and they would really want to make sure that they will regain so much lost footing, precisely because of the sustained attacks on the the way the people see the left-oriented groups.
Would it be advantageous for the vice president if some leftist or progressive groups at this point just declare it to the public that they are supportive, if they are, of the vice president, and
of course,
not really contain the discussion behind the scenes?
You know, Carmina, I don't think they're doing it behind the scenes, and I don't think it prevents anyone from declaring they're supporting whoever, no, whether he's supporting Mario or Pedro or Juan or whoever, except that they have to, again, because this is politics and you're talking about alliances, you don't want to be saying, I'm going to marry Maria without Maria knowing that she's being married. they have to talk first. And that's how they are trying to make the people understand. We are discussing it. We're considering options. And when we're able to find an agreement, then we will announce some kind of alliance or partnership. Meanwhile, of course, they can very well declare not that they're supporting this particular candidate. But again, the way of politics is you have to find some kind of agreement first, before you can formally announce a partnership.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. We've run out of time. It was great talking to you again, Professor Edmund Tayo of the Ateneo School of Government.
Thank you.
There, you take care. Keep safe.
Thank you. Thank you, Carmina.
All right, and that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines Podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the news channel.